News, I'm Tommy McNeil. The outer bands of Hurricane Florence are lashing the Carolina coast as officials continue their appeals for people to evacuate the area. The expert from the Hurricane Center, Stephen Still, says that the storm surge remains a major concern for both coastal and inland areas.
Storm surge to the tune of 9 to 10 feet in our barrier island areas, our sound areas, our estuarine areas, and our inland riverine areas. Again, winds in excess of 100 miles per hour for a duration of no less than 24 hours. And again, the potential rainfall amounts of 20 to 30 inches.
Florence is expected to cover the coast of North and South Carolina for days, with lingering rains aggravating the problems. President Trump is hearing bipartisan criticism after rejecting the government's official number that Hurricane Maria killed nearly 3,000 people on Puerto Rico. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
George Washington University researchers found the storm killed nearly 3,000 people, sharply up from the earlier estimate of 65. The president says it's not true and blames the number on a Democratic plot to make him look bad. House Speaker Paul Ryan's among those disagreeing.
There is no reason to dispute these numbers.
Democrat Luis Gutierrez, whose parents were Puerto Rican immigrants, calls the president delusional.
The number is based on facts and the truth.
But GOP Senator Chuck Grassley wonders about the sharp increase.
I'd like to know why that is.
The George Washington researchers are standing by their number as accurate and unbiased. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions instructed Department of Justice lawyers in a memo Thursday to resist the nationwide injunctions issued by federal judges that have hindered or halted some of the Trump administration's signature policies. This is VOA News. Myanmar de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi has defended her country against criticism of last week's conviction of two Reuters journalists on charges of violating the country's colonial-era Official Secrets Act. The two were arrested last December after meeting with two police officers at a restaurant in Yangon and given a stack of documents. They were investigating the massacre of 10 Rohingya Muslims by police and soldiers in the village of Ndin last year. The two journalists were sentenced to 7 years in prison. A senior UN official reports that a readiness plan has been developed to assist hundreds of thousands of civilians trapped in Syria's northern province of Idlib, while diplomatic moves to prevent all-out war accelerate. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the UN European headquarters in Geneva.
The UN regional coordinator for the Syrian crisis says he has appealed for the protection of civilians in Idlib to countries of influence attending a humanitarian task force meeting in Geneva. Panos Moumsis says he has received assurances from the Russian and U.S. co-chairs that everyone was intent on finding a peaceful way forward.
Diplomacy, prevention of humanitarian diplomacy is taking place at the moment at all levels to make sure that everybody works with the same objective to avoid humanitarian catastrophe and our fear that the worst may still be ahead of us, that this will not happen.
Since early September, aerial bombardment and shelling by Syrian and Russian forces have increased. The United Nations reports dozens of people, including women and children, have been killed and wounded, and several hospitals and schools have been attacked and put out of service. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Pope Francis Thursday accepted the resignation of a U.S. bishop accused of sexually harassing adults, just ahead of discussing wide-ranging sexual abuse allegations in the American church with U.S. Catholic leaders. Reuters' Lucy Fielder explains.
The bishop who resigned Thursday is Michael J. Bransfield. No details of the allegations have emerged. Pope Francis appointed an archbishop to stand in running his diocese in West Virginia and to investigate the accusations. And Francis has summoned senior Catholic bishops from around the world to the Vatican in February to work out how the church can protect the young. But the avalanche of allegations keeps coming.
Reuters' Lucy Fielder. The United States has imposed sanctions on two North Korean-controlled information technology companies based in China and Russia, accusing them of moving illicit funds to North Korea. The sanctions come at a time when the U.S. is maintaining pressure on the North Korean government and its negotiations to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. U.S. President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un signed an agreement during the historic summit in Singapore in June for the North to dismantle its nuclear program, but the two sides are at an impasse over the pace of North Korea ending its nuclear and missile development programs. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today is Friday, September 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Saturday's inauguration of Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa as a parallel president has been called off.
Yesterday at around 10 in the morning, we received a letter from the Zimbabwe Republic Police. Basically, they said that the government has declared a state of emergency in Harare because there is a cholera outbreak.
Nkululeko Sibanda is spokesperson for Nelson Chamisa. Kenyan Airlines gets certification to make direct flights to New York City. In Liberia, a deputy minister jailed by lawmakers could be released today after two nights in jail. And South Sudanese greet their country's latest peace agreement with cautious optimism.
We have seen previous peace agreements signed. We have seen citizens jubilating, but eventually we didn't see result. So hopefully by this time around, our leaders have learned the hard way. And by saying this, we mean as guns have to be silenced.
Meanwhile, SPLA-IO rebels say government forces have resumed attacks on rebel positions, and rappers in the DRC are getting involved in politics. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley, sports, and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Saturday's planned inauguration of Nelson Chamisa as Zimbabwe's parallel president has been postponed. Chamisa, the leader of the main opposition movement for Democratic Change, MDC Alliance, was going to be installed tomorrow because his party considers him the legitimate president who won the disputed July 30th presidential election, even though the Elections Commission had pronounced President Emmerson Mnangagwa the winner. Zimbabwe declared a state of emergency earlier this week in the capital, Harare, following 20 deaths and more than 2,000 cases related to cholera. Chamisa spokesperson, Nkululeko Sibanda, says the pronouncement itself may be illegal because it was never gazetted.
What has happened is that yesterday at around 10 in the morning, we received a letter from the Zimbabwe Republic Police notifying us that they had received our own notification to them in following the law of our event on Saturday, and they acknowledged receipt, which simply meant that they were okay with it. And then in the evening, we received a second letter indicating that they were now withdrawing their notification. Basically, they said that the government has declared a state of emergency in Harare because there is a cholera outbreak. But our challenge is that they have not gazetted the same as required by law, which means whatever declaration is made has no legal force. And therefore, the excuse itself is no legal force.
Let's assume after the state of emergency has ended, do you still have plans to hold your swearing-in ceremony?
Yes, the people of this country and the MDC will celebrate its 19th anniversary one way or the other. We will continue to make sure that the devolved government that we are responsible for is going to operate efficiently, effectively, and produce results for the citizens. Remember, President Nelson Chamisa is responsible for about 81% of the country's economy. And that's what Saturday was all about. It was about celebrating that and inaugurating a new idea of a devolved government.
Does the MDC, do you have, say, an alternative cabinet in waiting? Because it's one thing to have a swearing-in of Mr. Chamisa. It's another to have the government to run the country.
Well, certainly. Look, there is going to be a cabinet, and the president is looking at various CVs in order to decide the members of his cabinet.
Apart from the cholera emergency, a government official was saying that if you went ahead to have the swearing-in, that would be tantamount to a treasonal event.
We're doing nothing illegal. There was not going to be a Bible and a Chief Justice or anything of the sort. What we were talking about is the fact that President Nelson Chamisa, although he won the election and ZANU-PF stole it, he still has 28 out of 32 local governments that he needs to run for the next 5 years. And for that reason, there'll be no problems with celebrating and inaugurating the idea of a devolved government. It's the first time in this country that the government becomes much more devolved and local governments are more responsible for their own activities.
As you know, President Mnangagwa has called for national unity after this election. Don't you think that even saying that you're going to have an alternative president, isn't that divisive?
We have not said we're going to have an alternative president. We've said that this country has one president. Has a legitimate president and an illegitimate president. The illegitimate president, who is President Mnangagwa, has never called for peace in this country. We have been calling for peace before the elections, And President Mnangagwa did not respond to that letter. In fact, he put it to the media to mock President Nelson Chamisa.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. He spoke with me from the capital, Harare. South Sudan President Salva Kiir returned home yesterday, Thursday, to a jubilant welcome after Wednesday's signing in Khartoum of what the parties hope is the final peace agreement to end the country's civil war. But as we hear in this report from Winnie C. Renault, ordinary South Sudanese are greeting the new agreement with mixed reactions.
Some residents of Juba town say they are cautiously optimistic after the peace deal was signed in Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa on Wednesday. Emmanuel Agele, a resident of the Gudele suburb, says he believes peace will prevail because both the government and the opposition leaders are eager to end 5 years of violence that have plagued the country.
Surely it is going to hold because everybody is tired of war. The war has changed the situation of the country completely. And I'm sure that everyone doesn't want that kind of situation to go on, whether on the side of the opposition or the government.
Lawyer Bot Manuel Bot says he is tired of witnessing fighting and he hopes that the leaders have learned from their past mistakes.
We have seen previous peace agreements signed. We have seen citizens jubilating, but eventually we didn't see result. So hopefully by this time around, our leaders have learned the hard way. And by saying this, we mean as guns have to be silenced, IDPs have to be repatriated back to their homes, the refugees have to be returned to South Sudan. Security has to be guaranteed for the citizens to pick up their livelihoods once again.
But Atem Jongahai, a student at the University of Juba, says he is suspicious that lasting peace will come to South Sudan as a result of the signing of the peace deal.
For this agreement, I'm not that satisfied. Then being, there was a peace signed, the first peace was signed, was not that implement.
Another student at the University of Juba, Matur Dor Katuo, says the leaders should sympathize with ordinary citizens.
If they feel in the way we feel as citizens, I hope they will finally bring peace because this war will not make a way forward for the country.
Many residents of Juba town have welcomed the peace agreement with a lot of suspicion. Some are wondering if the leaders will implement the deal. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
As South Sudanese digest this week's peace deal, SPLA rebels say government forces have resumed attacks on rebel positions. Rebel Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel says government forces resumed their attacks on Thursday at Kandiri and Magalatore in Kajokeji County. He says the government's aim is to deprive SPLA IO rebels of any bases in Kajokeji.
This attack started on the 11th in Magalatore, that's in Kajokeji. Their base is in Agana. They always leave the base and come to attack our position. Their aim is to capture Mangalatore and proceed up to Liwolo. So it continued yesterday when people were signing peace, we were just clashing down in Kenji. Even this morning, today was the heaviest. They came at around 7 and immediately launched very heavy offense against our position. Their major aim is to overrun us so that we don't have any base closer in Kenji.
It doesn't seem to make sense that just barely 24 hours or so after a peace agreement has been signed for the government of South Sudan or their forces to, as you put it, attack your position. Does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense, James Badji. It is not the beginning. It has always been the case. Even in 2015 when we signed the peace agreement, when Juba, but people have been fighting us. They fought us in Eastern Equatoria. They even fought us in the river when Riek Machar was already in Juba in 2006. So we really know that this is going to continue. We are here negotiating peace. We even signed peace in good faith. But the regime, we don't know what kind of peace really they want. Because when we talk about peace, we say this is genuine peace, where there's not going to be shooting of guns anymore, where there's not going to be killing of people. But at the end, it's just a business as usual for them.
Many South Sudanese, they were very happy, or they are still happy, following the signing of the agreement. Even the IGAD countries and the Troika, United Kingdom, United States and Norway, also praised the signing of the agreement. But the Troika, they expressed reservation. They kind of cast doubt on whether this revitalization agreement would be fully implemented. They cited specifically these repeated ceasefire violations.
In fact, South Sudanese, if you have seen critical law, if you have followed, since the peace was signed, there has been no celebration at all, whether in Juba or in the refugee camps or in the IDP camps. Almost everywhere, there has not been any celebration. The reason being, We are here talking about peace. We are trying to sign peace. Juba is preparing for war. And our civilians in Juba, they are seeing the preparation of the regime. So they know that this is not going to be the peace that they really want. And that's why if Troika have the reservation, they have their eyes on the ground. They have been receiving reports from CITESAM. They have been receiving reports from UNMISS. UNMISS have been giving them all these reports. So they know that Juba will never really implement this peace the way it's supposed to be implemented.
Colonel Lampaul Gabriel, thank you very much for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you.
Colonel Lampaul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for SPLA Rebels. He was speaking with me from Kampala, Uganda. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 14th. Daybreak Africa time. It's 16 minutes past the hour. Liberia's Deputy Minister of Information for Press and Public Relations, Eugene Fangon, could be released from prison today, Friday, after 2 nights in jail. The House of Representatives ordered him jailed on Wednesday for contempt. As Moses Gazier would report from Monrovia, the lawmakers also declared Deputy Minister Fangon a non-governmental material.
Minister Fangon was invited by the House to answer to why he should not be held in contempt for allegedly ordering the detention of a legislative staff member who he claimed took his photograph while Fangon was dancing in a nightclub in the capital, Monrovia. Minister Fangon allegedly used profanity on social media against two lawmakers who had gone to seek the release of the legislative staff member. During the Wednesday special session, which lasted for 8 hours, Representative Edwin Snow and Akaris Gray told their colleagues what offended them most. Following the testimony of the two lawmakers, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Buford Chambers, asked Deputy Minister Fangon to answer to the allegations. But the deputy minister refused to answer, saying he needed time to return another day with his attorney. His claim, however, received several objections from lawmakers who were eager to render him the needed punishment for his alleged offenses. Minister Fangon asked the lawmakers to speak to his lawyers as stipulated in the Constitution, but lawmakers rejected his request.
Honorable Speaker, co-presiding members of the legislature, in keeping with Article 21C, I'd like to reserve the right to remain silent and speak only through my counsel.
Plenary was left sweating on a decision because the witness refused to testify. But veteran lawyer and Grenfell County representative Councillor Fonati Kofa broke the ice.
So based on that and his right to remain silent, which he has a right to invoke and which he can invoke every time you ask him a question, you have the evidence before you and you have other witnesses for which you can discern as a body whether or not the facts are alleged are true or untrue.
After nearly 8 hours of deliberations, Lofa County Representative Clarence Masakwe raised a motion for a vote of no confidence in Minister Fangon, declaring him a non-governmental material.
And after we have gone through the process now, I move, if I can be seconded, that this plenary, judging from the action of the deputy minister be deemed as a non-governmental material, and that the leadership of this house be mandated by this plenary to communicate with the chief executive our action and crave the indulgence of the chief executive to take the necessary step, which in our mind, the best step will be to withdraw the ministerial status of Honorable Eugene Lamin Fangon.
Following the unanimous vote, Minister Fangon was ordered jail for 2 days in handcuffs, leaving the joint chambers of the legislature. Minister Fangon said he was not given due process.
I was not given due process. I did not speak.
Minister Eugene Fangon has become one of the most controversial officials in the government of President George Weah. He has used the social media to rant at the opposition and his fellow government officials. Moses Gazo, VOA Daybreak Africa, Monrovia, Liberia.
Kenyan Airways has received approval from the United States Transport and Security Administration, the TSA, to fly direct from Jomo Kenyatta International Airport to New York City. Speaking in Nairobi yesterday, Thursday, U.S. Ambassador to Kenya, Robert Gordek, said the United States will provide $1.5 million to the Kenya Airports Authority for additional security and training. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
In a ceremony that was witnessed by Kenya Airports Authority and Kenya Civil Aviation Management, the U.S. Ambassador to Kenya, Robert Gordek, says The move will increase business partnership between the two countries. He says the direct flight that will commence officially on 28th of October this year is aimed at boosting the economy of the two countries and that U.S. will fully support Kenya. The chairperson, Kenya Airways Authority, Isaac Awondo, says from the new established route, the East Africa's economy and the region stand to benefit not only in tourism sector, but also for overall development of African continent. He says the authority will ensure safety of the passengers. On the other hand, Transport Cabinet Secretary James Macharia says Kenya will have a positive economic impact given the U.S. companies operating in Kenya. Macharia says the move will also ease the achievement of Kenya's government Big Four agenda. Many Kenyans see the agreement as a major accomplishment now that Jomo Kenyatta International Airport will soon become one of the elite African airports to be certified as a last point to departure to the United States. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Yamorino Jumbo in Nairobi, Kenya.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, rappers are getting involved in politics, including one well-known rap artist who hopes to fix the country's problem by running for a seat in parliament. Chika Odua reports from Kinshasa.
They do not sound like politicians. They do not look like them either. They are rappers, but they're getting ready to get political. It's a Saturday afternoon, and they have gathered, as they do every month, at a shopping center in Kinshasa to talk about how to do that. One of them goes to the stage to say that he's thinking of running for a local office. That was Lexus Legal, the most famous one in the group. He leads the charge, calling for rap artists to get involved in helping to fix Congo's problems. Do not hesitate to run for office, he says. If the national level is too high, go door to door to ask for support in your local communities, he adds. For 20 years, Lexus Legal has built a career with his socially conscious music, commenting on youth unemployment, corruption, and other social ills. And now, he is running for a seat in the national parliament.
Je tiens à rappeler et à souligner que ces choix, c'est pas une nouvelle carrière.
He says he wants his fans to know that he is not starting a new career. He is simply doing what comes natural to him. He has always been political, he says, as you can hear in his music. Politics and music are intertwined in the DRC. Chika Odua for VOA News, Kinshasa.
Minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa. Supposing here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sport in Ghana, where FIFA has appointed businessman Dr. Kofi Amoah as the chairman of a four-member normalization committee that will run Ghana Football Association and organize the election of new executives of the Ghana Football Association. Veron Musengo Omba, FIFA's Director of Development for Africa and the Caribbean, who announced the appointments during a press briefing in Ghana on Thursday, said membership of the committee was, however, not yet completed because some persons will be added after consultations between FIFA, CAF, and the government of Ghana.
FIFA, after consultation with the government of Ghana, the CAF, in accordance with its statute, decided to establish the normalization committee and appointed the following person as member of this committee: Dr. Kofi Amoah, president of this committee, Lucy Quist, vice president, and as the members, we have Ms. Na Nortes, Mr. Kofi Dual Andote. The rest, this list will be completed in due course after consultation.
Explaining the mechanisms of the normalization committee, Mr. Luca Nicola, FIFA's head of governance, said the committee will, among other things, run the GFA's daily affairs and review the GFA status to ensure compliance with the requirement of FIFA and CAF.
To run the GFA's daily affairs, meaning that the normalization committee will act in place of the GFA Executive Committee with the same rights and obligations. So the Normalization Committee will have a supervisory and strategic role.
Staying with football news, Kenyan League champions Gor Mahia FC head coach Dylan Kerr says the eagerly awaited international friendly match pitting the 17-time Kenya Premier League champions against 9-time English League top victors Everton FC on November the 6th at the Goodson Park will provide a flamboyant platform for the Gallo players to showcase their talents to the world.
The country of Kenya should feel proud that, you know, we're going as a football club to represent the country to, as has already been said, you know, one of the best teams in England, in the English Premiership, and also to a famous stadium, and for my players to have the opportunity to go and play in the English Premiership, because that's basically what we're doing. We're going there to play in the English Premiership, even though it's a friendly.
In basketball news, ahead of the 2019 FIBA Basketball World Cup, Nigerian national basketball team, the Didi Tigers, will later today go up against Cote d'Ivoire as the rounds of African qualifying matches resumes. So far, Nigeria convincingly defeated Rwanda, Mali and Uganda in the first round to stay perfect in 6 games of the FIBA Basketball World Cup 2019 African qualifiers. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, September 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again on Monday for more African news and futures right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day. You can listen to Encounter following VOA News every Saturday and Sunday, either on the radio or online at voanews.com/encounter. That's Encounter on the Voice of America. Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.